Hei og velkommen til Kritisk Linje. Jeg heter Marius.
Jeg heter Roar.
And because we most likely have an international audience for this episode as well, we're doing it in English.
And also because the last episode finished in English and this is a continuation.
It is. This is the second part of our interview with Martin Fischer, professor at Stanford.
Yeah. And let's just jump right into it.
Speaking of evolution, we talked a little bit about VDC in Norway. We've heard some examples from France and Netherlands and also the States. What's sort of the global impact of VDC as a framework in the construction business right now?
Yeah, right now when people ask me, so where do I see good VDC? I say two places you need to go is Oslo and Lima. So I think there is some very nice examples here. So maybe you will get some tourism if somebody around the world hears this podcast. But then also, thanks to some very forward-thinking Peruvians that are working globally, we were able to bring VDC to Peru, mostly a little bit the rest of Latin America, but it really seems to resonate well with the people in Peru. And you see some really fantastic examples of VDC there, very, very successful projects. For example, right now, a project at the University of Lima was done in like 9 months. The previous building that the university had built of similar size and type was 2.25 years. And the difference on that project was that there was VDC certified, VDC educated people on the client side, on the design side, on the construction side, including some subcontractors. And they just sort of spoke the language and it was kind of obvious. Yeah, this is how we work. This is better for me and this is better for the project. And now they're planning to do the next project, which I think when they first started and they said 9 months instead of 2.25 years, everybody said, you guys are crazy. And now they're saying, I think we can do this in 6 months on the next project. So we'll see. That's the one is just finishing. So you see some fantastic projects. Also the facilities for the Pan Am Games in 2019 were done with VDC in record time, globally record time, 16 months for design and construction of Olympic level sports facilities. So go to Peru. And I think in California, what you see is we've really made a lot of advancements in digitally supported fabrication. So I don't see that quite as much. I don't see quite as much BIM capability in the subcontractor community, which then leads to them having control of the information that they know is coordinated. So then we have seen very high levels of offsite fabrication. So that's maybe some things you can see there. I would say struggle a bit in sort of Asia, Africa, Australia, Middle East. There I see a little bit less penetration. People, it still seems quite traditional in sort of the workflow, very much separating design and construction. And then you're not using like BIM, right, in a good way. Because for me, I always think of BIM as a building information, the information about the building, and building information, the information to build. It's kind of a double meaning in English, mm-hmm. Even though often it's just understood as building about the building. But actually, I think the really interesting thinking about BIM is when you think of it in both ways. But then you don't get to the building as a verb use case, and then you don't quite get as many benefits.
I've heard that the VDC was really well adopted in Norway because of, especially two things. First off, like, BIM has been big here for years in digitalization. We've come quite far, and the oil industry has pushed us, right? And we've been winning some of these BIM awards and stuff. So I guess we can be proud of that. And also, I read this master thesis once about a Hofstede analysis, where they analyzed like how different cultures are, and we have quite high scores on collaboration. Like really not very strict power structures, the power distance from me to my boss, we're on the first name, like we don't have to bow to him and use his second name all the time, right? And those are also values that kind of underpin VDC, right? Those behaviors in building blocks.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. One should not generalize across different cultures, but You're right. I do observe differences in how ICE is deployed, right? Because in an ICE session, you have to show a certain level of vulnerability. You have to admit to what you don't know. And in some cultures, that's harder for an engineer to admit to the things they don't know and be open about it, etc. But then you don't really get into collaboration, right?
Yeah. Even here, I remember like the old-fashioned design meetings, we would sit around a long table. The table was in the center of the room. That was the star of the meeting. And everyone was sitting around. One person was talking. And whenever the architect said something, everyone nodded. And I was thinking like, whoa, I don't understand anything, but all of these people must really understand this project. And most of them probably did, but I guess a lot of people nodded because you're supposed to. And then same team, a few months later, went over to this ICE session, and people then started, because they were standing in front of BIM models and touchscreens. I saw a lot of more fingers and people talking, saying, what's this? Where's this pipe going? And I actually don't think those questions would be asked in that very formal setting around that big table.
Yeah, so, that's a key change that we have found is really important, to have these sort of interactive displays that are big, that get people out of their seat, out of holding the cards close to their chest and getting involved and engaged. And that's what you're seeking. Are my people really engaged on the project?
Yeah.
But then you can do something. With engagement, you can do something. And sort of the two key things I've seen that you can try to get engagement, if you listen in and say, yeah, that's okay, nice theory, Martin, you know, I'd like that too. But having these interactive touchscreens and getting people to realize I can actually participate, I can have influence. And the other one is throwing out some numbers, making objectives, not say, let's try to maximize prefabrication on this project. Or let's try to minimize rework. Everybody will nod and say, yeah, that is good, and nothing will happen. But if you say, let's fabricate 60% of this project offsite, and then people will react. They will say, are you crazy, Martin? 60%? How the heck are we going to do that? Or they might say, why only 60%? Why not 80? Like, what stops us at 60? Whatever it is, reaction. Now you have a reaction. Now you have engagement. Now you can take your team somewhere. So those are two quite simple techniques that I would recommend you.
But there are also some misconceptions with that. I remember when we started doing ICE sessions, having touchscreens with BIM models and making people stand in the meetings was an epiphany. It really changed how people behaved. But then we had some people who hadn't seen VDC properly before. We came into these big meeting rooms and they saw the touchscreens and said, that's what it takes. As long as we buy those touchscreens and put the BIM on it, this will work itself out.
Yeah.
And that's an expensive misconception.
Yeah, I've seen the same. It's like, they're using Revit. Okay, I'll buy Revit, or whatever, or ArchiCAD. I mean, I don't mean to, Yes, that I have seen as well. It's a bit sad.
VDC is a classical example of without the right tools, you can't get the right behaviors. But if you focus only on the tools, that's never going to be a success, right?
Yeah. And the sort of the best analogy I found that was also used by a Dutch construction CEO of a small construction company. Again, his colleagues asked him, like, why do you go and hang out at Stanford? And what do you learn that? I just for VDC. Yeah, but I just bought 6 licenses of Revit in that particular case. But again, you know, there could be any tool.
Yeah.
And like, what else do I need? And then my friend said, well, you know, you could also buy a airplane, like a 737. If you wanted to, you could buy one. They would surely sell you one. And would that make you an airline?
No.
Well, no, of course not. Well, exactly. Like, you know, if you want to be a modern construction company or a modern engineering company, a modern client company, yes, you can buy the airplane or you can buy the tools, but you need much more. It's obvious when you talk about an airline, but it's the same, I think, exactly the same thing for us, right? And VDC, I think, you need to learn many more things, but VDC is sort of the basis on which you can grow.
And also how to apply it. And there's a thing I want to ask, because you mentioned in the beginning that doing a VDC course is a learning by doing. It's not like you get a textbook of 1,000 pages. This is VDC. And if you know all the stuff inside this book, you get the course certificate. Now, some people may ask, why not a textbook? Why do you have to learn by doing? Why do you have to do that?
Because we want the people to think for themselves. I mean, VDC is a framework, and you have to learn what it means for your job. I think that's a professional obligation we have in our industry. And I'm not saying that to sort of punt writing a book. I do actually really mean it. And we have been asked, like, why can't you, give me the recipe? But that's impossible. I mean, yes, you know, often the argument is used, our projects are unique, so we don't have to do anything. We can't innovate, etc. But it's true, the projects are unique. Of course, there's many similarities, and so we should leverage those, but projects are unique. And so whatever recipe we would take from a few projects, then they wouldn't necessarily apply to another project. And so you have to still think for yourself, yes, of course, look at what made other projects successful, but you will have to make that your own. And so we were worried if we wrote a book that it would be treated like a recipe book, and then people would say, well, that doesn't work, or, you know, and then we give people excuses for not actually using it. And if you think about it, this was sort of brought home to me again as we were working on a framework for digital twinning. So digital twin is currently a name that's thrown out a lot. And several industry people came to us and said, you know, this is kind of confusing. Like, everybody means something different for digital twin. So could we have like a framework like we have for autonomous driving? Like it's 11.0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So 6 levels, and then it's very clear. We said, yeah, we should be able to make that. Like 6 levels of digital twin, maybe 4, maybe 12, whatever it is, right? So we went to work, and we couldn't figure it out. We couldn't come up. We looked like for frameworks everywhere, and we couldn't figure it out. And eventually it occurred to us, wait a minute, you know, the framework for autonomous driving, as complex as autonomous driving is, we're talking about a driver, you know, one type of user, mm-hmm. doing one action, driving with one product, car. In the construction industry, we're talking about an architect doing a design of a kindergarten, or another architect doing a design review of a stadium. And then we're talking about a subcontractor procuring the materials for a road. And I mean, it's just like, right, if you start to think about the number of products we have, the number of players, and the number of actions that have to be carried out, it's a crazy web of work, and each of those has sort of its own way of working. And what we need is a way of all of these own ways of working, which of course we have to respect to some degree, to come together on a project. And I think that's what VDC does. But then by necessity, it's a framework. Mm-hmm. So you talk about the same things, you focus on the same thing. How do we actually work together? How do we leverage what everybody knows? How, et cetera, et cetera, the things we have talked about. But it becomes, we haven't been able to figure out how to sort of write a book that would give you the recipe for all of this multitude of things that have to happen on the project.
So that's why the course is very important.
And we have the learning by doing, and then the sharing. And so you can... that's the other powerful thing I've seen in the course is, we have our experiences, we work on projects, of course, super important, but then it's difficult to actually learn from many, many other projects because we don't really actually see them. And in the course, you are together with, in Norway, typically around 200 professionals, and that's just super powerful, to see, oh, wow, they're doing the same thing, or they're doing something different. Why? Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, either way, you will learn. Right, in the same type of project, different kind of projects. So that, again, transparency, like you mentioned, Aurora, is super powerful.
Yeah, and I think that rings true for me as well. From when I did the VDC certification in 2017-2018, I think I learned as much, if not more, from my colleagues doing the course with me as I did from the lectures, because all those discussions between us, that really sort of empowered me and my understanding of the framework and how they applied it and what they learned. So it's super important.
So this VDC certificate program we're talking about that we took, and it's changed format a little bit every now and then, but it's basically close to a full year. You learn about VDC through a hectic first week, you implement it on your project, and then you have to document from every month how you're applying VDC. And in my opinion, like I remember some people were disappointed that they weren't given a toolbox in the introduction week. Yep. And it was like, it's just a bunch of talking. Well, you know, it's a bunch of talking because you're learning the principles and you're seeing a bunch of project examples. Then you have to figure out, like, how do I believe in these principles and also how do I apply it in my project? But after seeing 100, 200, 300 VDC reports, you start seeing some patterns. Oh, this is what an ICE session is. This is what good PPM practice is. This is good BIM practices. But you always need to consider, like, how do I do this in my project? And I guess that book would be very long if you were supposed to cover every possible scenario.
Yep.
Like, how does VDC look in a huge hospital project versus a small kindergarten project? Practices might look a little bit different, but based on the same belief, right?
Yeah.
Same
exactly. Principles. Exactly. Yeah. We're still talking about objectives, we're talking about how we collaborate, etc. Yeah. But the details will be, by necessity, a bit different. Now, you mentioned the VDC course and how it starts sort of with a crash course, a week where you learn the terminology and then you apply it and report and document, which was a very new way of doing professional education, at least when we designed it. At the time at Stanford, there were a lot of professional education courses. You show up for 3 days, you listen mostly, do some exercises, some workshops, some discussion, and then you do like 6 of these courses and then you get some certificate of something. And I said, just because somebody did that, I have no confidence that they actually can apply it in industry. And if I'm going to sign my name, I mean, I was maybe that arrogant or something, I don't know. If I'm going to sign my name on a certificate, I have to have more confidence that they actually know what they're doing. Because that was the challenge. So how the whole VDC professional education program originated, we had our annual SIFI Industry Advisory Board meeting in 2007. And the reflection of the managers at the meeting was, we're starting to use a lot more BIM. And then we expect in about 15 years to be having quite digital practice. This is quite a different way of doing a project. Now, if you reflect back 15 years, 1992, most of the people that are leading projects or leading the company now were with us then. So if you go forward from 2007 to 2022, most of the people are likely going to be with us. But when and how are they going to learn how to function in this new world? Could you help us with that? So we came back with this like 2-week course and, you know, all this stuff. And they said, no, 2 days. And we said, no. And so we said, no. First day said, you're crazy. And then we said, you guys are crazy in the industry. You want some significant change, right? You want an actual impact. You can't just, you know, splash a little water on it in like 2 days, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we agreed on a week of learning the terminology, the method, the concepts, and on actually then applying it on projects to actually earn the money back that then you invested in time and money for the course, hopefully, so that we can learn as a community, keep learning together. And so that was sort of the genesis of the course and why it is the way it is.
And it's changed format a little bit. Me and Marius, when we participated, it was a 10-month thing for 25 people in one company. But these days, you have scaled it up because of the popularity. Now it's about 200 people, and it's many held companies with a university around the world.
Yeah. So we have offer this program in Norway, and we have mostly had people from Norway, but a few other countries, mostly a few Swedes, and a few others have joined the program. That is together with NTNU, and then in Peru we work with University of Lima. So we always have a local university partner that connects us with the local practices and hosts the event, etc. And then in Switzerland we work with the University of Applied Sciences in northwestern Switzerland, that is a leader in this field in Switzerland. So that has been for me really fun to collaborate with those academic institutions, but also then the many professionals. And it's really, really actually powerful. So one anecdote maybe I want to, if that's okay, I share.
Go ahead.
From the first, we call it large-scale VDC program, because the demand in Norway was really going kind of crazy, which was nice, but I had to figure out, I mean, I like coming to Norway, but I do have a wife in California and so on. So we had to figure out how we scale the program. And thankfully, some of the VDC certified people said, yeah, we should do that. And so we help you teach it. And so that's how the idea of a large-scale program came about. And so here we organized this first program. We had 200 people. And I think it was Monday morning, August, was it? Well, Monday morning in August 2019. And I'm thinking, okay, what did I get myself into? You know, I'm here with 200 professionals from Norway, the way I know them, which is good. They're pretty hard-nosed, you know, professionals. They paid quite a bit of money. And they're taking the week off, maybe more importantly. We're going to have to offer a lot of value to them. Otherwise, they're going to, like, be really mad at me. I said, oh, but okay, I'm here now. Let's go. So we did the opening session, you know, introduction. Then we had a coffee break. And then I stood in line for coffee. And standing next to this guy, and this he goes to me and said, oh, this is awesome. And I'm like, okay, hopefully you forgive me. But I thought, wow, an exuberant Norwegian on a Monday morning, unsolicited, you know? Because what how I've known it, usually when I ask, like, was this good? They would look at me like, did we complain? You know,
it's okay.
That was kind of the highest praise you got. Like, did I complain? No, I didn't complain. So why do you ask whether it was good? Yeah. You know, I would have told you. You know,
yeah.
So I wasn't used to that. Right? He says, "This is all." You know, he goes to me, "This is awesome." I said, "Okay." Oof. I was like, "At least one guy of 200 likes it, so that's good." And so I asked him, "So tell me more." And they said, "You know, can't you see? We are 200. The industry will have to listen to us. We will change the industry." And this was my first experience, because I've always been, so what happened always in the smaller groups of 25, people there in the program got excited. Wow, the potential of VDC, of creating better projects, more efficiently, with more fun, is, we see it. And then like 10 seconds after that revelation, they were like, oh, wait a minute, my boss doesn't understand it, my colleague doesn't understand it, my project model, where do I begin to like educate everybody?
Exactly.
And so there was never this sense of empowerment. And I said, oh, I've been doing innovation. I thought I had to be like in a small group so we can really sort of make sure everything, you know, everybody learns it. But I've done this totally wrong. Like here we have 200 people and they feel empowered. We will change. The others will have to pay attention to us. And I had never been in a group of professionals that felt like so, exuberant about a new method and not worried about bringing it to their projects.
And I guess it's pros and cons, right? When we were in a small group of 25 in one company, we really created like a tribe and had a critical mass of people who believe the same thing. But we then had to go out in our projects and convince the architect and the owner and everyone we're building together with that these are methods we'd use.
Yeah.
The good thing is that tribe. But I guess the con thing is exactly that, the people you're collaborating with. And in this group of 200, you're talking across the industry.
Yeah.
And con is that it's quite big and, you know, it's hard to organize. But so you split those 200, I know, into teams. Each team gets a mentor.
A couple of mentors now.
And both me and Marius in different courses have mentored groups. And I would absolutely agree that 2 days is not enough, 2 weeks is not enough. Because usually with VDC, the first week, they all think like, this is nothing new. And then they get into it. They're like, oh, this is kind of new. Then they have to do it in the projects and then report and inspire each other. And then after 10 months, I mean, the light goes on at some point during that stretch.
Yeah.
But you would lose so many people if you shorten it from that. So it's my idea, at least.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think the longevity of it and how deep you get into the matter, That's sort of the key to understanding and how you apply it in the projects and what you learn from it. Because by trying like
doing 20-hour sessions, you sort of get the hang of how to do it. Mm-hmm. I always say to my projects when I have them, we have 12 sessions today in one of the projects. I'm like, it's a great session. Yeah, it's awesome. Imagine how good it will be at 50.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
And also, the way they, you know, show their work is through some reports in PowerPoint format, right? Which leaves some text, some numbers, but also a lot of images. And in any PowerPoint, any presentation needs to be presentable. And it takes a few months to really build your story. But I remember I had someone say, like forget about the term VDC. When I log into these monthly meetings with my VDC team in this class, we're just talking about projects. Like, this is how you should present, how do we build this project? Like, we're talking about how we're collaborating in the design process, in the build process, between them, digitally, physically, scheduling, right?
Yep.
And that takes a few months to get to that point.
Yeah, you really bring it to not make it sort of a sideshow. Oh, yeah. Now I got to think about, write something about VDC. No, do it.
Yeah, and really here's a fancy picture of my BIM. Right, and you just throw it in the presentation, but to actually have a coherent story.
Yeah.
So, Martin, it's been a long and very insightful episode, and we talked about VDC currently, in the past, different parts of the world, different ways of implementing it. Where do you see kind of this field moving in the future? Like, what ways can it go?
Today, VDC is really this hybrid of some of it is digital, some of it is still very much human touch. Which is by necessity, because that's where we are in the current evolution. But it's very clear, we see it in other sectors, that the future will be increasingly digital. And a particularly important aspect of that increased digitalization I see on the production process side. So we've all seen the power of BIM to get, as you mentioned, people together, see the same project, be very efficient, but also have access to the information that represents the same thing we have just looked at. And then we can use that information for management and engineering systems and for simulation and all kinds of tasks. We don't have the equivalent on our processes. So I think that's where I see things going, that we will find a way of creating a process tool. Okay, we can map a process, but to also not just map it, but to instrument it then with real world data, so we can actually also compute it, simulate it, and understand if we configure the process this way, if we configure it that way, what does it likely impact on the project. So I see, and then through that, now we have digitalized the product and the process, and I think that'll provide just a dramatically richer support of us people, the organization doing the project. So that's one direction where I see it going. Of course, there'll be many other tools that are brought in, construction robotics, etc. But they will, change some aspect of the work, but very importantly, they will also continue to provide information or our source of information that gives us richer insights into the workflows. So you can imagine maybe other ways in which digitalization will shape how we do our projects. But I think in the VDC framework, that's a particularly important one in terms of looking at the production processes.
Because BIM today, when people look at a model, they usually see a whole bunch of information, but it's a lot of information about how it's supposed to be built.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go out and work, and kind of the feedback loop data back, how things actually go out on site is a little bit more difficult. But the technology is available. We're just not really putting the pieces together, if I understand it correctly.
But I'm sure that's there will be people, lots of smart people in the industry, they will put this together.
Yeah.
Should we just wrap up with a short list of words? We always do that.
Fun.
Yeah, the abbreviation list, sort of the appendix to the podcast. Yeah. At the very top, the VDC, Virtual Design and Construction, the whole holy grail of frameworks for construction in my mind. And in that aspect, we have the PPM.
PPM, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was
Project Production Management.
Yep.
And we have BIM, of course, Building Information Modeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And
people discuss whether it's the actual building information model or if it's or modeling. I've also heard Building Information Management, which was new to me.
Yeah. Oh, I've never heard that. Interesting. I've heard
Building Integration Management.
Building Integration Management.
It's about having really good information.
This is an episode in itself.
building.
Yeah.
And we have we did mention PPC as well. We talked about that in a different episode, but plan percent complete.
Yeah, we covered it in the last planner episode. Mm-hmm. That it's a number of the number of tasks that were completed as planned.
Yeah.
On the schedule.
We had ICE, integrated concurrent engineering.
Mm-hmm.
The key,
which is a different way of doing meetings in its simplest way, but mm-hmm. also together with the builders and designers collaboratively. Yeah.
And the thing we forgot then, I don't know.
We mentioned a few like small ones, like you said pull, right?
Mm.
Which we mentioned before.
Yeah.
Start with the end in mind and pull your way backwards in a scheduling session, for instance. Yeah.
And we discussed AI and VR. So AI is in artificial intelligence and VR is in virtual reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those fancy headsets.
Yeah.
We could quickly stop with that. Like, what do people see when they try VR? Like, what is the technology?
So the cool thing, with virtual reality, you are immersed into 3D model. You're not just looking at it. So for some tasks, I found it's fine to just look at the model, but for other tasks, it's better to be in the model. And then when you're in the model, you can actually bring others into the model as well. So then you see their avatar. And that can be very powerful in experiencing. It allows you to experience the spaces much more. So when you look at a BIM, we tend to look more at the things that create the spaces. And when you're in VR, you're experiencing the spaces. And you get a sense, this actually works. I mean, you're looking at the things that frame the spaces as well.
We've seen the same thing. So we can do a short stop here, right? We've seen that, you know, putting a BIM on a screen is good, but it's still like a 3D BIM on a flat screen.
Yeah.
But we use VR in some cases where it's really important to be in the space and explore, you know, in a kitchen, like how would the chef actually move?
Exactly.
Putting your head into like this technical duct, like, is there enough space? So,
We've seen the same thing. All about the immersion of it. Yeah. And from my profession, that is landscape architecture, there's something called sense of place. And I find that you actually get from VR, you get a sense of place. You sort of, you feel the space rather than just observing it.
Mm-hmm. So that was a little stop on VR. Did we mention AR, augmented mixed reality?
I don't think we did, but sure, far away.
So that's when you mix the BIM with the, so, you know, in a VR goggle, you put on a pair of glasses, you're completely within the model. AR, you can see through them, so you can see the real world, but the model is kind of an overlay. Yeah. Isn't that kind of basically the idea?
Yeah.
And it kind of goes both ways. It's sometimes good to overlay the model onto the real world. And sometimes it's good to overlay the real world onto the model.
Yeah. And hopefully they match.
Hopefully they line up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't come up with any other words that we should discuss.
No. I think we're good.
You could easily add those words later. But I can't think of,
No.
Awesome.
So it's just a matter of wrapping up. So Martin, thank you so very much for your time and for sharing all of your experience and knowledge here with us.
Thank you so much for popping by. Fantastic. Yeah,
very much my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. And I look forward to the future of construction, understood very broadly.
Awesome.
As do we.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Bye.